What's up? What's up? Brendan Clancy here for KFC Radio, and we're proud to present the very first episode of a new Red Sox podcast. Jared Carrabas and Pete Blackburn put it together. They're calling it Section 10, and they got big plans. So we're happy to help them get the first episode off the ground, and let's get into it. Here's Jared and Pete.
You're listening to KFC Radio.
What's up? It is Wednesday, March 4th, 2015. And this is the inaugural episode of the Section 10 podcast with myself, Jared Carrabas, and Pete Blackburn. Pete, say hello.
Hi, how's it going?
Pete is, he's an Endicott graduate, probably.
Oh, I definitely am. And you're the one who I'm not really sure if you actually graduated from there or not.
We don't have anything to prove that yet, but I was on the seven-year plan. Could potentially be a doctor by now with all my years of schooling.
You texting me like once a week asking where a building on campus was a very interesting experience, because I would just be like, yeah, that big one that says library, that would be the library. And you're like, where is this?
Yeah. Well, I mean, hey, I went to night school and I only went to one building. Therefore, how am I supposed to know where anything else is? But anyways, this is the Section 10 podcast, the pretty much the best Red Sox podcast in the world.
Well, it took us 3 hours to set up the equipment. It better be.
Yeah, it's now 5 o'clock. I think I got here sometime around 3-ish. So, but we're live. So the whole outlook that we have for this podcast is basically going to be hopefully two shows a week. The first show being just Pete and I talking Red Sox for probably about an hour. And if all goes according to plan, we're going to have an interview with someone Red Sox related, whether it be a front office member, a player, a minor leaguer, a media personality, something of that nature. The idea is to do a Red Sox podcast just talking current events, and then an interview once a week. For those of you who don't know, I'm gonna hand the microphone over to Pete so that he can give himself a little introduction on what he does and what he's all about and why it is that he's even here, because he mostly tweets about hockey. So I don't know how he ended up on a Red Sox podcast, but I'll let Pete talk about himself for a little bit.
Yeah, I'm actually kind of asking myself that same question. I'm mostly a hockey guy, but I am a big baseball fan when the season rolls around. At the moment, I run Next Impulse Sports, and I spend way too much time on Twitter, which is probably the only reason that I'm on this podcast to begin with. And I'm kind of a dick, so that's also a pretty good reason.
Yeah, I'm definitely not going to argue that.
Yeah.
Aren't you that guy on WEI, though?
That's true.
The diarrhea show?
I probably should put that out there. Part of Sunday Skate on WEI, 8 to 10 every Sunday, is talking about hockey, Bruins talk. And we are getting just rave reviews, especially from people within WEI. Just straight rave reviews on that show.
Why don't you just explain what it is that you're talking about for the folks that really don't know what it is that you're talking about?
Well, Kirk Minahan said that he would rather listen to the sound of his own diarrhea than listen to our show. But that came strictly out of him hating DJ Bean, who's the host of the show, for whatever reason or another.
That was awkward.
Oh, dude,
I listened to that, and it was just, I mean, I like Kirk personally, and I also like DJ, and it's, I feel like there's a lot of situations when it comes to me, when there's feuds between Boston media members, and it's like a pick a side kind of thing. I just say, hey, I like Kirk and I like DJ, and whatever it is, between them that they can't resolve, that's between them. I like them both, but, that was kind of awkward to hear Kirk talk about, you know, a show that's on the station that he works for in such a negative manner. I was like, what are you doing? There's going to be several wrestling references on my behalf, because I'm a huge wrestling fan. But in the wrestling world, it's called burying someone. You know, if they're, you know, the upper management is talking about a wrestler and they make them lose on purpose because they don't like them, that's called burying somebody. And I just feel like Kirk was just burying DJ. I was like, you know, DJ's a great kid. He's really good with his Bruins coverage. same goes for you, Pete. And I was just really baffled that he would go, even if you don't like it, just don't say anything. Like, why would you go out of your way to kind of crush the dreams of a kid that's just trying to make a name for himself?
I don't want to go too much into it because I would like to keep my position on the radio show. And I don't hold, I'm not employed by WEEI. So I'm not going to say too much about it, but, yeah, I agree with you. I don't understand it. But anybody who follows me on Twitter knows that I pick my media battles in the Boston landscape. There are some people who that I don't particularly like very much. And I'm not ashamed to admit it, but yeah, we'll try to stay away from that.
Please. I haven't had a good tweet beef in a while. It's been a while.
I mean, I don't remember the last time that I saw you.
Usually, if people have a problem with me, they'll slide in the DMs to fight that battle because they don't want the Carabas Mafia going after them. Yeah, I mean, you're just gonna lose that battle.
You're part of Barstool now, so that's that's Barstool's whole thing. Is like, if you attack somebody from Barstool, you're gonna get it.
Yeah, you're all done. I mean, the stoolies come out in full force, which I guess we can talk about that. I mean, I am property of Barstool Sports now,
for better or for worse.
Yeah, the last time that I did a podcast was the Sock Space podcast that I did with Scott Sudikoff. That was last season. Scott's doing his play-by-play thing now. So now we have the Section 10 podcast, which I should probably explain where the title came from. I've had season tickets at Fenway Park since 1998. And guess what? They're in Section 10. Section 10, row XX, box 97, seats 12 and 13. If you want to come harass me during a game, that's where my season ticket seats are. So basically, obviously, this podcast is going to be my perspective of the Red Sox. And Section 10 is the only perspective that I've had of the Red Sox live my entire life. I mean, obviously, I've sat in a bunch of different seats. But for the most part, I've seen hundreds of games from Section 10. So I thought that was an appropriate name.
We're not recording from there right now. No. We should let people know that we're in my office in my house, which is a spare bedroom. And it's like the size of a closet.
It's comfy, though.
It is comfy, but we basically trashed this place.
It was much cleaner before I got here.
Yeah, it definitely was. The boxes and bags, and we moved the desks, and you're just going to leave me with a disaster.
Oh, but it should be noted that although we're not in Section 10 right now, we are going to do an interview in Section 10. And I haven't announced who the front office member is yet. I guess we can announce it now because shit, it's our first episode. We might as well have some important news to share. It's Red Sox COO Sam Kennedy. We'll be doing an interview on the Section 10 podcast. We haven't confirmed that date yet, but we have confirmed that we will be doing an interview with Sam in Section 10, presumably this summer when it's not 32 degrees out and snow everywhere. So there's that.
I like that we're already rewarding people for sticking through the first 10 minutes of the show.
Congratulations, you've made it through the first 10 minutes. So let's talk Red Sox, because that's why everybody is here. Pretty eventful offseason for the most part. Adding names like Hanley Ramirez, Pablo Sandoval, Rick Porcello, Justin Masterson. I thought that the whole focus of the offseason was going to be on John Lester. And I kind of wanted to talk about that because, you know, I did write about it at the time, but the wounds are still fresh, especially now getting to see John Lester in a Cubs uniform. I remember being pretty confident. And now that Twitter is a thing and news can change within 15 seconds, pretty much, you don't just wait for the newspaper to come the next morning. I really did see a lot of back and forth, like he's gonna be here, he's not gonna be here. I was actually pretty tapped into that situation. I had a couple of little birdies myself, and I did find it interesting that the Red Sox thought that he was gonna go to the Cubs, but the Cubs thought that he was gonna go to the Red Sox. I mean, that's why up until the last minute when it happened, I'm not surprised that he went to the Cubs. I mean, I pretty much was saying all along that they were the front runners, but it wasn't by a large margin over the Red Sox. But I did find it interesting that neither side was confident that, you know, he was going to be there. But for what it's worth, I did talk to somebody within the Red Sox who was like, yeah, he's going to be here for the next 6 years pitching for the Red Sox. So, I mean, there were some people that thought he was going to come back. But then there were some people who were just like, he's gone. He's not coming back.
My thing is always like, there's always somebody who leaves a town as like a impending free agent. Like, they'll sell them and then they'll be like, oh yeah, but we can get something for them. And then they'll sign back here in the offseason. But how often does that happen?
Never.
It never happens. So yeah, when people were like, all right, we traded Lester, get Cespedes, and Lester will sign back here in the winter. And my thing is always like, you don't know that.
No.
Like, as soon as you trade away Lester, you subtract so much percentage, in my mind at least, that he's going to come back.
And in his mind, because he admitted it afterwards. I mean, this was after the fact. I think he had already signed with the Cubs when he made that statement. But he did say that, you know, being traded kind of opened his mind to pitching for another team. Before that, it was unfathomable. He said it before. He was like, hey, you know, I want to pitch here until they have to rip the jersey off my back. And then he goes to Chicago. I mean, he goes to Oakland, and he just opens his whole mind to this idea of pitching for another organization. And he liked it. Obviously, they made it to the playoffs. It obviously didn't go very far, but he got out of his comfort zone, and it wasn't as bad as he thought it would be. And, you know, obviously he has that relationship with Theo Epstein and Jed Hoyer over there in Chicago. And, you know, I think that obviously hindsight's 20/20. If you could go back in time, knowing what you know now, obviously you don't trade him. Then you got the fans who are saying, well, you know, you got Cespedes out of it, and Cespedes turns into Porcello, so you have Porcello for 2015.
You arguably don't need Porcello if you have Lester, though.
Right, exactly. And I mean, if I would take my chances of, you know, a greater odds of being able to re-sign John Lester as opposed to a guaranteed 1 year of Rick Porcello. But yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't buy into the theory that the Red Sox made their best effort to retain him. I think that what they did do is they overestimated the value of pitching him the whole angle of finish your legacy here with the Red Sox. Like, oh, we're the almighty Red Sox. You know, you're a big name here, and, you know, you'll just be somebody else over there. But then again, you know, if you're the Cubs, your angle is pretty strong too. They have they have the best minor league system in all of baseball by a large margin. Where they're going in the future is, you know, postseason contenders annually. So and obviously if I'm him, I want to be a big part of that.
But their big pitch was how much they suck, like, or how much yeah. they have sucked. Like, that was their big pitch, which is hilarious. It's like, we haven't won in 100 years. You can, like, help us do that and make history.
Make us not suck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's that's hilarious that their like, big selling point was that we've been terrible for 100 years.
Well, I mean, if you're John Lester, put yourself in his shoes. Do you buy into that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if I'm him,
you have the chance to become like a huge hero over there.
Right. When he's already a hero in one of the biggest sports cities in the country anyway. Now you have the chance to be one in two of the biggest sports cities in the country.
And nobody's going to hate John Lester when he comes back here either. Like,
nobody blames him. This and Larry Lucchino admitted this. I was standing right there. It was at Christmas at Fenway. And it was, I believe, Lucchino's first public appearance since Lester had signed with the Cubs. And he basically said, yeah, this is on us. Like, we screwed up. And, you know, I mean, they screwed up several times during the course of that whole thing. They screwed up in spring training before the season.
Well, what was the initial offer? It was like
4 years, 80, $70 million.
$70 million.
It was basically saying, "Hey, we don't value you at all." Like, how can you offer a guy 4 years, $70 million, who's basically on the open market? I know that the Red Sox offer was $6,135. I can't remember what he got from the Cubs. It was like what, six or seven?
Was it 160?
It was something like that. Yeah, I think he had an option year that took it to like 180 or something like that. So you know what he's worth, and especially the year that he had in 2014.
You can get a guy at a discount, like prior to his contract expiring, but you're not going to get him for half.
No,
or less than
not
half.
Not even close.
Yeah.
And the thing that sucks about this is that if they had just made the offer that their final offer to Lester was $6,135.
If they made that a year prior.
Exactly. Yeah. If they make that before the 2014 season, he's more than happy with that. He's here. He's here now. He's in Fort Myers right now if you make him that offer before the 2014 season. But enough about the past. You know, it is what it is. And I'm happy that he got paid, and I'm happy in a place that he has a chance to be somebody and not just
I'm gonna root for him. Me 100%.
Too. Who wouldn't? I don't blame him at all for
the only reason I don't want to root for the Cubs is because of Joe Maddon.
Yeah. Yeah, that is.
I used to like him, and I just hate who he's become. He's just I feel like he's become like a mascot.
He is like he's that. Just he's like a genius. He's a genius, but he's a douchey genius.
Yeah, he knows he's great.
Look at me.
Yeah, pretty much.
I don't like that.
Yeah, he's like the Rex Ryan of baseball.
That's a Rex Ryan who sometimes wins, though.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, good enough to get into the playoffs, but never good enough to actually win the whole thing.
Yeah, okay, that's fair.
So we're going to move on to actual things that matter now, and the center field situation right now. Ruzne Castillo gets hurt. I think I tweeted out today, I said, rest in peace to the center field competition, March 3rd, 2015 to March 3rd, 2015, because that was it. It was just, we played in one game, he's hurt, and, you know, Mookie's pretty much your guy. I don't see a problem in having a guy like Castillo start the season in Pawtucket. I mean, everyone wants to point to his contract. It was like 7 years, somewhere in the neighborhood of like $72 million, something like that. That's a good chunk of change, yes, but who's saying that if you put Castillo down in Pawtucket for right now, that he's not going to be an impact player on your team at any point during the 2015 season? I mean, if that's going to make him better, because you have to remember, before the Red Sox signed him, it was probably like a year, maybe more, since he actually played in a live game, and then he goes and plays, whatever, 10 games for the Red Sox last year. Not a big sample size. So I'm okay with, albeit a 27-year-old, I'm okay with him getting some time down to Pawtucket. And the same goes for Mookie. If they want to put Castillo in center to start the year and they want to put Mookie down there, I'm fine with that too. What is he, 22 years old?
Yeah, and you're not going to win or lose a division in the first month of the season.
No,
you're not. It's a long season. It's fine. I mean, everybody will freak out about it either way, no matter what. So
yeah,
you got to do what you think is best.
Right. I mean, if you look at it, that's a good point, because if you look at it from that perspective of people are going to freak out no matter what, pretty much the only option that you have to prevent, you know, fan base freak out is a Victorino trade, because that allows you to put Betts in right, Castillo in center.
And I think a lot of people are rooting for a Victorino trade because he you know, last year didn't do anything.
Yep.
And I just feel like he's out of a lot of people's minds. And they want the exciting young guys, not Victorino.
Right. But at the same time, you have to look at last year's model and be very cautious of going with the young guy model, because that did not work out last year whatsoever. I think, I want to say it was like Farrell used 55 players last year and 19 of them were rookies, and that was not a winning formula. So
I mean, it's way smarter to have too many guys than to prematurely trade away a guy like Victorino and have one of the young guys not pan out.
Definitely. Yeah, and especially a guy like Victorino who has, you know, experience out there in right field. Because basically, if you're playing right field at Fenway Park, you're a center fielder. And I'm glad that the Red Sox finally discovered that's the model that you need to go with. Because J.D. Drew was one of the best right fielders that I've ever seen, but everyone got on him because, you know, he was just so lackadaisical and, you know, he wasn't diving out there.
Everybody
like
just
Nixon.
Hated that guy's fucking personality.
But that's the thing, is that if you look, okay.
That's the reason everybody hated J.D. Drew. Like, if they try to tell you otherwise, they're lying. Like,
if you do not like J.D. Drew, I can guarantee you that you probably liked Cody Ross. If this is true, I challenge you to look at Cody Ross's lone season with the Red Sox and compare it to J.D. Drew's first three seasons with the Red Sox because the numbers are identical. So you don't like J.D. Drew because, yeah, he got hurt a little bit, but for the most part,
he's so very fucking productive. Boring.
He was boring because he doesn't smash helmets.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. That's why people didn't like J.D. Drew, because he was so fucking boring to watch.
I understand that argument, but it's like, I don't need boring. I need productive.
I'm not trying to make the argument one way or the other. I'm just stating for a fact that that's why people didn't like J.D. Drew.
Yeah, and he didn't you know, break bats over his knee. He didn't throw his helmet like Euculus. And he wasn't diving around out in right field. But the thing about J.D. Drew is he didn't have to. That was the thing. Trot Nixon is diving all over the place. Why? Because he's like slow and he's just barely getting to the ball. The balls that Trot Nixon had to dive for are the balls that J.D. Drew just, whatever. He's camped under that for like 3-4 seconds. I don't know how he just got onto J.D. Drew. But moving on to the next topic is the pace of play. This is, for some reason, this is a big issue this offseason, the pace of play. I'm pretty passionate about my stance on this, but before I say what I think, I want to know what you think. I am a baseball fan. I watch other sports. I follow every Boston sports team besides the Celtics, unless they're good. But for you, you follow pretty much every Boston sports team.
Not the Celtics.
Except for the Celtics. Yeah. So from your standpoint, because you're primarily a hockey guy, and that's a very fast-paced game. So what is your thoughts about the pace of play in baseball from someone who's not, you know, like a baseball purist kind of guy?
I mean, I enjoy the game of baseball, so, like, I have no problem with, like I don't watch, like, a baseball. I wouldn't watch a baseball game in years past and be like, oh, this is so fucking slow. I can't watch this. Like, I enjoy the game of baseball. But I do think that it could benefit from being sped up a little bit. Like, I'm not saying, like, you're going to have to play, like, fucking turbo baseball where a dude has to throw a pitch in, like, 5 seconds. But, like, I think that if you can cut it down, like, cut, like, the time from pitch to pitch, or, like, fucking dudes who step off, like, 2 or 3 times in a row and step out. Like,
it's excessive.
Like, you don't need that shit. Like, there's definitely ways that they can speed up the game a little bit.
Yeah. And I think this is David Ortiz who made the point about keeping batters in the batter's box. It's a disadvantage to the hitters. Because, I mean, a lot of guys, yeah, I understand. They're stepping out of the box and they're looking into the stands to see the hot girl, whatever. But a lot of guys, they're thinking about, okay, like, he just threw me like a 2-1 fastball, like, inside part of the plate. What's he thinking here? Like, what's the next pitch going to be? And I understand that's why the baseball is boring crowd fucking drive me crazy, because it's not boring. They're just simple minded because they don't understand that. I mean, in their mind, it's like, oh yeah, they throw the ball, they hit the ball, and like, they stand around, pick their ass in the outfield. No, like, there's little battles within the game. There's so many games within the game, and that's why it's so interesting.
And that shit comes out in, like, the playoffs. Like, that's when you really see it. Like it's just like a straight hour and a half, like, tense, like, battle,
right? And that's what
it builds up, and it's crazy.
It build the suspense build up in a baseball game is unlike anything in any other sport, and that's what I love about baseball, especially in the postseason, is because it's such a slow build up, but the payoff is always fantastic. Yeah, it's always a great payoff.
Like, the difference between, like, the Major League Baseball playoffs and Stanley Cup playoffs, they're both great, and I love them both, but they're so different. Like, Stanley Cup playoffs, it's usually, like, certain moments that are just, like, kind of crazy. But for baseball, it's so drawn out where it's so tense, and the intensity is just, like, through the roof. And like you said, the payoff is usually worth it.
Yeah,
so
absolutely.
So for that, I hope the pace play doesn't screw that up. But I do think that there's ways, like, that they need to kind of speed it up a little bit.
But in a sense, that's nitpicking, in my opinion. It's trimming it. And I just don't think that, I think it was Lou Maloney who said that the average baseball game is either three hours and 5 minutes or 3 hours and 10 minutes or something.
It's the same as a football game.
It's probably even shorter because, I mean, football game is like an event. It's like 4 hours. You're committing to a football game, which is fine because they play once a week. So you can do something like that. Baseball, you're playing every single night. But
and it's
if
more,
it's...
And the there's more action in a football
yeah,
game.
Yeah, and there's more constant action. Yeah. But in baseball, you know, say the game is 3 hours and 10 minutes on average. So if you implement all these pace of play rules, you're going to get the game down, what, to 15 minutes less? So that's 2 hours and 55 minutes. So it's like what crowd are you going to attract that's like, oh, 2 hours and 55 minutes, I can fucking do that. 3 hours and 15 minutes, that's fucking crazy. Like, I'm not going to watch that shit. But it's like, and at that point, when you're trimming down those 15 minutes, it's changing the game. So are you sacrificing the quality of the game, trimming it down 15 minutes to cater to a fan base that probably isn't going to watch anyway? It doesn't make any sense to me whatsoever to change the game in a way that's so minuscule and really doesn't have an impact on the game whatsoever, other than to irritate the players. And pretty much it might be sacrificing some of the quality of the game. So, I mean, and I can totally see where Ortiz is coming from. Not having to, not being allowed to step out of the box is kind of penalizing batters a little bit. So what are you doing? I mean, like Clay Buchholz, I think it was David Price is the slowest in between pitches, and Clay Buchholz was number two. It was something like 28 seconds, and Buchholz was like 27 seconds. That's ridiculous. And the rule, I believe, is 12 seconds. I'm not sure. I think the penalty is you're supposed to charge them with the ball. I think you can. If they don't pitch in 12 seconds, you can charge them with the ball. Don't quote me on that, but I'm pretty sure that's what it is. So if Buchholz is double that or more than double that, okay. The problem might be with the pitchers.
That's what I think. That's what I think it is. It's the pitchers. Like,
right.
There are pitchers who just take way too fucking long
right.
between pitches.
And what do you think, you know, guys who step out of the box like Ortiz, okay, he's adjusting his batting gloves, whatever, he's spitting into his hands. But say he takes 10
pitchers
seconds.
Pitchers are using that time anyway.
Right. And say he takes 10 seconds to do all that stuff. That's a fraction of, like, that's one third of the time that David Price is taking to do his shit. So he gets back into the box and he still gets to wait another 20 seconds before he gets a pitch anyway.
I want to know what Nomar would think.
Nomar would be beside himself. He'd be like, you know what? I mean, it's a $500 fine. So, I mean, this is, I mean, if you're really going to attack this problem, you know, a $500 fine to guys who are making, you know, $17.5 million a year.
It's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. What are you really doing about the problem? So I think that the problem is really with the pitchers. It's from the pitching aspect.
What's the pitch clock?
Yeah.
What is that? Like, what's the time on that?
I don't know. Yeah. I don't know kind of what they're doing with that. I think it's just kind of testing it out to see, you know, how quick that they're going with this. But I think the real issue here isn't so much at the major league level. I think they're kind of concerned with the younger demographic and the youth baseball leagues, because kids are now getting into lacrosse and they're, you know, trying out other sports instead of playing Little League baseball, which is fine. I don't care. I mean, it's not a big deal because, you know, clearly, America isn't the only talent pool for baseball players. I mean, they're still playing baseball in plenty of other places. So, I mean, you know, and that's the thing is people see this as a problem. You know, oh, kids are playing lacrosse instead of Little League baseball. You know what I say to that? Who gives a shit? Let them. Because you want to know what I
think? That's a terrible fucking decision for young kids because they're not going to make any money playing lacrosse.
Well, yeah, they're not going to make any money playing professional lacrosse. But my take on that is that when I played Little League Baseball, there were so many kids that sucked. And let me tell you a story, Pete.
They all play fucking lacrosse.
Yes. In high school, the kids that sucked at baseball when they were little go on to play lacrosse. Lacrosse is, I'm sorry if you're a lacrosse fan listening to this, but it's true. All the kids that sucked playing baseball were like, oh, we have another option. I'm going to play lacrosse. And that's what they did.
This is how much I hate lacrosse. I sucked ass at baseball, and I refuse to play lacrosse.
Yeah, well, I mean, at least you're taking a stand against it.
Yeah, I was like, I'm not going to be that kid who sucked at baseball and then went on to lacrosse.
Right.
I just sucked it up, and I sucked ass at baseball, and I just kept playing.
Well, that's the thing, is that if other kids who are maybe not as good at baseball in the Little League, you know, age group – If they're trying other things, that's great, because what does that mean? The leagues may be smaller, but the competition is better. So now the youth baseball program is probably going to produce better baseball players. So I really don't, I mean, it doesn't alarm me that, you know, little leagues organizations are shrinking, because that just means that they're weeding out the kids that maybe aren't as good. Little Timmy can't hack it. That's fine. That's fine. And let me tell you a story, because really quick, because I think I told this story like yesterday or the day before. At my last little league game ever, I'm playing third base, and for the Yankees, by the way. I played for the Yankees, but you know what? So did Theo Epstein. How did that work out? He won you a World Series championship or two. So I'm playing third base for the Yankees, and we're in the game that it was the American League Championship, so the winner goes on to the City Series. And it took two nights to finish this game, because that's how close it was. And on the second night, it was like the bottom of the, I don't know, 10th or 11th inning, and there's a fly ball out to center field. The kid was like my best friend at the time, drops it, winning run scores, and that's it. My Little League career is over forever. And I cried in my room forever. I haven't spoken to that kid
since that day. It's hard to believe why that kid's a former friend now.
Yeah, he's not my friend. I'm not even joking to you. We have not spoken since. We're not even friends on Facebook. That's how serious this was. Anyways, so that's our take on the pace of play. So we can move on to the Red Sox rotation as of right now.
I had to Google it before we started the podcast.
God damn it, Pete.
I'm just gonna throw it out there as a disclaimer that like this is how much I know. I had to Google who's on the Red Sox rotation. And like as soon as I saw it, I was like, oh yeah, that's right. Like I mean I'm keeping up with it, but
that's
like
a poor reflection on me.
Yeah, pretty much. Mm-hmm. What are you thinking? But like yeah, I had to refresh my memory.
I have in front of me what you wrote down.
Yep.
And
is it correct?
It's not correct. I mean, you have the right people. It's just not in the right order. Okay, have Rick Porcello, number one.
Well, I didn't put it in order.
It looks like you attempted to. Because, I mean, all right, put it this way. All right, this is what you wrote down. You have Rick Porcello, you have Clay Buchholz, Joe Kelly, Wade Miley, and Justin Masterson. Okay, so if I were the Red Sox, this is probably what I would actually do, to be honest with you. But because baseball doesn't make any sense, Clay Buchholz is going to get the ball on opening day.
Yeah, because it's because of tenure. He'll get the ball because of tenure.
Yeah, it's a seniority thing. Yeah. And honestly, I tweeted this out months ago. I think it was
really
like after
matter.
It was like the day after the Super Bowl, maybe. I was like, you know, that's great. Patriots are Super Bowl champions, but Clay Buchholz is still your opening day starter, which sucks. But
honestly, does it really matter who the opening day starter
is? It doesn't. It really doesn't, because it's such an overrated thing that gets way too much attention because there isn't anything else to talk about this time of the year.
I think if you re-sign John Lester and then you start Wade Miley on opening day, like there would be an issue there. But like if you don't have like a clear-cut ace, it doesn't fucking matter.
It doesn't. It doesn't matter at all. But Clay Buchholz is the longest tenured pitcher on the staff, so he's going to get the ball on opening day.
Which I'm fine with.
I'm totally cool with that. Yeah. Rick Porcello is your number two. I would say that Wade Miley and Joe Kelly are probably interchangeable at three. I mean, I think it's going to be Miley just because, you know, two right-handers and then you go with your lefty guy. Then Joe Kelly four, Masterson five. When they originally signed Justin Masterson, I was kind of thinking, you know, is he going to be in the bullpen? I mean, he's a sinker ball pitcher. He's been in the organization before, and he thrived as a reliever.
And this was early enough where there was still a lot of talk about were they going to go out and get an ace.
Right. And they're still fucking talking about
it.
Yeah,
no,
I
know.
It's March 4th, and there are still rumors about the Red Sox getting somebody like Cliff Lee mm-hmm. or Cole Hamels. They were kind of stalking the rotation of the Washington Nationals for a little bit. Which I kind of thought was strange for reasons of, I don't know, why would you trade one of your aces? I can understand the argument. Okay, Jordan Zimmerman basically said, if I don't have a deal in place before the season starts, I'm going to free agency. And he's going to get a monster deal. I mean, he's the real deal. But that's fine. I mean, they're going to be a good team. They're probably the best team in the National League, arguably. I mean, they've got to be in the conversation. So if you're going for it, you know, you sign Max Scherzer to a monster deal, why would you trade one of your other best pitchers? I don't get it. Just because he's going to be a free agent at the end of the year? Who gives a shit? Win a championship this year, and then whatever, deal with it in the offseason. You know, I mean, there's... he didn't say, you know, yeah, if I don't have a deal in place, then, you know, I'm going to free agency. You can still sign him in free agency. Like, don't worry about it. And it increases your odds of bringing him back if you win a friggin' championship with him. So, yeah, I mean, obviously, I'd love to have Jordan Zimmermann here, but I just don't understand why the Nationals would do something like that. And then there was the rumor where Steven Strasburg was on the open market. You put together a package for Strasburg. That's great. Why would you trade him if you're the Nationals? Like, we, you know, there's obviously the injury concern, but he's a strikeout machine, and I think he's been close to, or at least over 200 innings for like the last couple of years. So it's, I don't understand that argument either. It'd be nice to have one of those guys, but you know, logic and reasoning, something that we like to use here on the Section 10 podcast, said why would the Nationals want to do that? So yeah, I think that's going to be a rotation. It's going to be Buchholz, it's going to be Porcello, Miley, Kelly, Masterson. And you know what? Do I care that they don't have an ace right now? Honestly, no, I don't. It doesn't bother me. No. I think that just looking at these five names, starting from the bottom, Masterson is a guy who in 2013, actually, if you go and look at it, statistically had a better year than John Lester. Miley, his numbers away from Chase Field have been really good. Especially, you know, if he has great road numbers and he's been in not a pitcher friendly ballpark, I think that he'll really benefit from, you know, coming over here, you know, having Fenway, whatever. Joe Kelly in 2013, I think he had an ERA in the twos somewhere. Clay Buchholz, I wish that, you know, we had first half of 2013 Buchholz here forever, because that guy was friggin' awesome. But that was only one half of a season, and we haven't seen that guy ever since or before that. And then Porcello had a hell of a year last year. So I think that in a contract year, it would be a safe bet to say that Porcello could replicate his season from last year. Next topic, Pete. Curt Schilling tweet situation.
Interesting.
Yeah, I mean,
there's a polarizing opinion on that, it looks like.
Yeah.
Like, I've seen a lot of people go one way or the other. Like, yeah, a lot of people think that Schilling's a scumbag for some reason. And I think...
Why would you defend your daughter, you scumbag?
Yeah, I think a lot of it goes into a lot of people don't like Curt Schilling.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see the general consensus in a survey format without the opinion of Rhode Island residents.
I think that the best way to go about it would be like call him like Exhibit A. Like Exhibit A congratulated his daughter on Twitter.
Yeah.
And then all these trolls came out of the woodwork and said that they wanted to like fist her and stuff.
Yeah.
And
it just went over the line.
It was so over the line. But like if you use him as like Exhibit A, everybody like, oh God, he has every right to stand up for his daughter.
Right.
And then they're like, well, Exhibit A is Curt Schilling. And they're like, oh, well, no, fuck that. Curt Schilling's terrible.
Yeah. I mean, all right, I get it. And he gets it too. I mean, there were some people that, you know, were making playful comments and he's like, oh yeah, that's funny. But then some people were just going over the line with completely graphic shit.
Oh, yeah.
Even I was looking at it, I was like, what the fuck is wrong with these people?
Well, it's Twitter, dude.
Twitter. But I mean, I get some shit on Twitter. I mean, especially now that I've opened up Pandora's box by joining the Barstool Mafia.
Oh, yeah.
I get some shit now, but that's fine. And I can deal with that.
It's different when it's your daughter. Like,
yeah,
that's kind of
why I don't have any desire to reproduce. I mean, I know that I'm going to get punished with a daughter, and I don't want case in point, Curt Schilling. It's just like, you can't even congratulate your daughter on the internet without these assholes coming out here and being like saying all this stuff. And I was looking at it, you know, looking at these comments that people were saying, and I was trying to look at it from almost like a psychological perspective of, do the people that are saying this think that they're being funny, or are they really just saying it in a malicious way to kind of maybe get a response from Kurt, or are they just saying it to get retweets from people that might see it? Like, what is their goal here by saying these things to Kurt Schilling? I don't understand it, and I don't see why it's, you know, why would it even cross your mind to think that it was a good decision to say this kind of shit?
I just think that like a lot of people don't really realize that they're tweeting this shit at like a real person. Like, I think that they just have the idea that they're like tweeting it at the idea of Kurt Schilling.
Yeah.
Like the Kurt Schilling that like they see on TV and that he's never gonna see this shit. Like, but they just wanna spew that hate.
Yeah.
But then like people read that shit. Like, right. Kurt Schilling is going through his Twitter mentions, like seeing that, like people are like, yeah, I want to do this shit to your daughter.
Yeah.
And it's fucked up. I really don't think that people realize. I'm speaking some people, obviously there are malicious people who are like, yeah, fuck Kurt Schilling, he's going to read this.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. Twitter trolls, like getting in that mind is a really dark place.
It is. I mean, these are just obviously people that are really unhappy with their own lives, you know? Like, I don't see any successful people with college educations being like saying all this shit to Kurt Schilling.
Well, dude, there was somebody who worked for the Yankees,
yeah,
a part-time employee or something.
Yeah,
like
he got
that.
Fired.
Yeah, and then there was somebody else who got suspended, who was in college or something like,
yeah,
that. Got suspended from college. Like, it's people don't realize that, like, people, like, this shit is out there. Like, people are gonna find it. Like,
yeah. I mean,
not everybody puts him on blast like Kurt Schilling does, but like, you gotta realize that that's a possibility.
Right.
Like, don't be a fucking idiot.
Especially the people that weren't even trying to hide their real names. Like, some people,
like,
you know,
if you're like an anonymous account, like, I mean, you can still get tracked that way, but like, it's a safer bet that you're not gonna like get publicly put,
right,
on blast.
Yeah, people were, you know, tweeting him with their real picture, with their real names, and it's like,
and he said
found everyone within an hour,
said. On Google, like,
yeah,
he was like, literally all he had to do was Google them,
right?
So like, that's how dumb these people are. Like,
yeah,
you're searchable on Google.
So where do you stand on, did you read his blog post?
I did,
the
actually
marathon blog post.
Yeah,
it was long, but
his,
I read,
grammar was terrible, by the way.
Yeah,
it was tough to get through that.
It was definitely not edited.
Like, I read some shitty like sports blogs,
yeah,
throughout the day, because that's where I get a lot of my content is from other people's blogs and stuff like that. It's long story, but yeah, like he needs an editor, dude. He's not a writer, but
yeah.
I mean, he definitely did put some thought into it, and it was well thought out.
Yeah.
And I mean, he has definitely has a point.
Yeah.
Like,
and I mean,
no doubt.
I just, I don't know. I don't know. I was thinking about it, about how he kind of put everyone on blast, and they definitely deserve it. And I mean, I don't see, there were plenty of people that were like, oh, well, you know, it's kind of hypocritical to, you're Twitter bullying these people by, you know, sending your fans to go attack them. But it's like, dude, fuck them. Like, they deserve that. Like, for every action, there's a reaction. There should be consequences for their actions, and this is just one of the consequences. I mean, losing your job, great. That's what you deserve.
I don't think that you can tweet at somebody and be like, I want to fist your daughter, and then get mad about somebody bullying you,
right,
online.
Right, you can't be like, hey, take it easy on me. I'm,
yeah,
just some guy. Like, no. Like, that's what you get, and I'm glad that he kind of set that standard that maybe will put some Twitter trolls at bay for a little while and think twice about tweeting at celebrities. But there's some celebrities that get some pretty, you know, messed up tweets, but their volume is so vast that they're never going to, you know.
Yeah, there are a lot of people who say that they don't. I mean, it comes
like
down to whether
Kanye
or not you
West Twitter mentions.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to whether or not you read all your mentions.
Yeah.
Which a lot of people don't do, but a lot of people also do,
yeah,
that you wouldn't expect.
Like Bill Simmons gets a shitload of hate in his.
Well, he says that
he doesn't even
read
look at
it. Yeah, he doesn't read any of them.
Yeah.
Which is, I mean, good for him. But
yeah,
it would probably, my life would probably be a lot better if I didn't read my mentions. But
I love it. I mean, I'm totally accountable.
I mean, Twitter. I mean, I do love it. Like, but like it makes me go fucking insane.
It doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me at all. I mean, all right. This is coming from someone who's a Barstool writer now.
Yeah. Okay. But I will say that, like, I think the Red Sox fan base is the smartest fan base in Boston.
Yeah.
I do think that. And I think the Bruins fan base is the fucking dumbest in Boston. Like, by far, I think.
Probably fair.
Yeah, and, like, the shit that, like, comes into my mentions from, like, these... Like, there are a lot of smart Bruins people that I follow and stuff and who follow me, but there are also a lot of dumbasses. Yeah. And it just... It makes me go crazy. Yeah. Like, I just can't wrap my head around the stupidity sometimes.
Yeah, I mean... But, I mean, I can understand where most of the shit that I get is not personal. So I don't really care. I mean, there's... I think it was you that sent it to me. Like, my first Barstool blog ever. It was like, oh, you'll never forget your first comment. It was something like, what? Like, you look like a meth head or something?
Oh, yeah. It was like, you look like a meth head.
Yeah. But it was like a picture of me from like 2008 before.
And you did look like a meth head.
Yeah, I did.
You look like, you weighed like 80 pounds in that picture.
Yeah, I probably was. I was probably right around that range. But yeah, so that's my stance on that, is that I obviously was very appalled by the tweets that Schilling got, and no, I don't think that it was hypocritical of him.
Yeah, I can't believe how much he got, how much backlash that he got for putting them on blast.
Yeah, I don't really care at all. That. I mean, I'm glad that he cared enough to defend his daughter like that.
And I'm not saying that I'm like a huge Schilling fan either. Like, I mean, like I love the guy, what he did here, but like I realize that he's not exactly like a fucking prince for what he's done after baseball.
I mean, obviously, I put his opinions on anything baseball related in very high regard, but I kind of wish that Twitter had like a politics filter. I just don't give a shit about any of that stuff. Moving on. Fucking Jerry Remy's Bar and Grill closed.
I saw that today, actually. That was the first time that I saw of it, and it caught me off guard.
I honestly
love that place, dude.
I saw the headline, and it was from a blog that isn't really that popular, but I follow them.
It's Barstool?
I've never heard of those guys. But yeah, it was from like a Red Sox blog. It's not very popular, but I follow them on Twitter. So I was like checking the day. I was like, is it fucking April Fool's? Like, is this like a joke blog, like clickbait? And then I searched it. I was like, what? I mean, it's only the Fenway location that closed.
Yeah. How many are there? Four or three? There's at least three.
Yeah, there's the airport and one.
None of the other ones
are closing. The water. And then the Fenway one. There might be more, but I have no idea. Don't quote me on that. But. Yeah, I was a little surprised to see that. I mean, obviously, I can understand that the foot traffic probably isn't that great during the off season, but
it's still Boston, like it's still a Fenway area.
Yeah, it's still a pretty popular.
That place isn't a ghost town in the winter,
right? Yeah, right. And I mean, I've been over there. I go to Jillian sometimes, and there's a lot of people going around that area for the bar scene. But I guess I don't know. I was just really surprised by that. I remember I had a webcast show. If you're a listener right now, how long you've been following me for, but I had a webcast show on the True Fan Network back in 2010, and we had John O'Rourke on the show, who is Jerry Remy's business partner, and they were talking about, you know, their plans to open it and the official, opening they were going to do. And I remember we did a couple of shows from Remy's, and my 21st birthday, that's where I went. So my first legal hangover was sponsored by Jerry Remy's.
Wow.
Yeah.
Actually, that's got to be devastating.
True story. Do you know who bought me my first legal beer?
No.
Dan Duquette.
Really?
Yes. The man who drafted Nomar, traded for Pedro, and signed Manny bought me my first legal beer.
That's fantastic. That's a good story.
That's a great story. And Nesson was there, and... He bought me the beer, and then the camera just panned from the Duke to me receiving this beer, and I didn't know what to do, so I chugged it.
Good for you.
Well, I mean, they didn't say anything. I was like, all right, well, I guess I'm chugging this fucking beer. I don't know. Moving on. This is actually pretty awesome. What is the weirdest Twitter story that you've ever had?
That's my dog's nice, making a nice cameo.
Yeah.
Weirdest Twitter story I've ever had. Oh, man. Well, dude, it's my Twitter following is so weird. I don't understand it sometimes. Like, I don't know where I pick up like some of these people who follow me. but like I think there are a lot of teenage girls who follow me.
Really?
Yeah, it's surprising. Like they're
you're like the Justin Bieber of hockey Twitter.
Yeah, like pretty much. I think so. And so, God, my dogs are so annoying. But like there are some girls who like are creepy obsessed with me.
Really?
Yeah. Like
so they must also have a thing from
can't be older than like 15 or 16 years old.
That's dangerous.
It's not really because I have no interest in like hooking up with anybody off Twitter. But like so like it's just creepy like how like cuz I'm like a 22-year-old kid who lives with his mom.
You're 22?
No, I'm 23. I'm an idiot, actually. You don't even know how old you are. I'm a 23-year-old kid who blogs from home and lives with his mom. So, like, I don't think that these, like, girls, these, like, teenage girls should be shooting a little bit higher on the charts for,
maybe
like,
a little bit.
For, like, who they're obsessed with.
It's
like,
because you're an Endicott alum. Did I even, well, no, I did. I was going to say, did I even mention that we're both Endicott alums?
Yeah, that was in, like, the first 30 seconds of the show.
I blacked out.
Yeah, why? What's yours?
See, I wrote down weirdest Twitter story. I don't know if this is weird, but it's just kind of hilarious. The first thing that came to mind when I came up with this topic was it was last season, and we have a mutual friend, Mike Silva, shout out, also a former, he's an Endicott dropout.
He is.
Mike Silva was over my house, and the Red Sox were playing the Indians, and they were in like the 5 millionth inning, and it was really late at night. It was probably like, I don't know, like 2 o'clock in the morning or something like that. And I forget the guy's name. It's like John or something. He's the guy that sits out in the bleachers and he hits the drum. The Indian guy.
I remember this.
Yes.
I know where you're going.
So it's 2 o'clock in the morning and we're watching the game. And there's not really a lot of Red Sox fans still up.
I was up.
So I see the guy, John, drumming. And he's out there drumming, whatever, hitting his drum. And he's passed out. Like, he's drumming just from muscle memory, but he's asleep. His eyes are closed. He's slouched over. He's still drumming. So I make a vine of this. And as I'm vining it, Silva is in the background. He goes, piece of shit. And I
which is like the most typical Silva thing.
Yeah,
Silva
that's
quote
just
ever.
Silva in a nutshell. Just hating people for no reason. So I vine this and like I didn't really listen. I tune him out a lot. So he says piece of shit when I'm recording this vine. So then I tweet it out not knowing that it's in there. And it's, you know, getting a bunch of retweets. I was like, oh, that's cool. Maybe I'll get some followers out of this. So then Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe retweets the fucking thing. And I was like, oh, shit. I was like, and then I messaged him or something. I was like, Pete, I was like, my idiot friend says piece of shit in that. I was like, you might want to unretweet that. And he was like, oh, don't worry about it. It's late. Nobody will see it. The fucking Cleveland Indians see it and they retweet it. So now it's going viral. And the guy, John, sees it. It gets to him. It's going completely viral. It's got like, I don't know. Right now, I think it has like over 400,000 loops. So Pete's like, don't worry, no one will see it. It got to the point where Jared Carabas, in my Twitter handle, was trending in Cleveland. And I was like, oh my God, this poor guy probably thinks that it was me that said it.
Yeah, you had to come out and say that
I think we tried to justify it by like, I was like, yeah, Mike was in the background talking about Johnny Gomes or something like that. He wasn't talking about John. And he was, but I mean, I did not know that he said it, but when I tweeted it out. And it was literally 2 o'clock in the morning.
It was like very like low. Like it wasn't super audible. You had to kind of listen for it.
And most people, I mean, you know, most people when they look at a vine in a tweet, they don't have the sound on anyway. Yeah. So, I mean, and the Cleveland Indians beat writer for MLB.com tweeted it out too. So it went from, I think that's how it got to the Indians feed.
Okay.
It went from Pete to the MLB writer to the Indians feed, and then it went everywhere. It was on the front page of Barstool the next day. That was before I even wrote there. They just saw it. So poor guy. Like, you know, this tweet's going viral.
Typical Mike Silva move.
And the official Indians Twitter account in the entire city of Cleveland is talking about it. Oh, man. Anyways, moving on to Yoan Moncada, who signed with the Red Sox. I don't know if it's like a week ago, week and a half, recently. We'll say recently. So Yoan Moncada signs with the Red Sox. Pretty much nobody had that happening except for me. So that was, I'm not saying it was just me, but it was pretty much just me. The Red Sox make an offer to a guy who they have to pay a 100% tax on. So I believe it was $31.5 million was the winning bid. The Yankees were somewhere 25, 27. I was surprised that the Dodgers weren't more aggressive, being that they had that huge TV deal with like $2 billion or something like that. But yeah, there weren't many people giving the Red Sox a shot to sign this guy. And I think it ultimately did come down to, you know, the highest bid. I'm pretty sure, I don't know if I read this or I heard it somewhere, but he wanted to go to the Yankees, but the Yankees just weren't the highest bid. So he's a hired gun, and I'm totally fine with that.
I'm definitely fine with it too. And it definitely caught me by off guard. Like I wasn't expecting it. And I saw, like, I actually didn't even really pay attention to like who he was, like, until I found out that the Sox won the bid. Cause I was like, from everything that I was seeing, it was like, all right, the Sox aren't going to get him. Like, there are so many teams interested and there is not really a need there for the Sox. And so I just figured that they weren't going to win it. And then they did. And I was like, wow, all right, who is this guy? And I looked it up and I was like, wow, he's pretty solid.
Yeah.
So I mean, I'm excited now, even though we won't. The next
Robinson Cano.
Yeah, I saw that. That was wild.
The reason why I was so optimistic about the Red Sox potentially going out and getting this guy is I was having a conversation with my friend Peter Gammons. You might have heard of him. We were talking on Twitter, and I think I tweeted out something. It was like a scouting report of Moncada and, you know, what he was all about, and, you know, scouts talking about his ceiling and his potential and all this stuff. And they were pretty much specifically talking about his offensive potential. So, I mean, they did say that he's, you know, pretty close to a five-tool player, which is ultimately very rare within the game today. So I saw this, you know, report about how basically just talking about his offense. And I was like, if he's pretty much going to be of value to you mostly as a bat, the Red Sox, it doesn't matter that they have Pedroia here until 2021 or whatever it is, and they just signed Sandoval. I was like, that is a bat that you need. And it's, you know, in today's game, young talent that gets drafted by a team, it doesn't matter. Like, they're probably going to get locked up. Like, guys like McCutchen, and you just saw it with Stanton. I mean, that premier talent is not getting to the free agent market anymore in their prime years. So, yes, they paid 100% tax, so it's like they're committing $63 million to this guy. That's great, because guess what? You know, he's going to cost a shitload more if he were to make it as a free agent, you know, if some other team got him and he made it as a free agent when he was like, you know, 28, 27, whatever. So he's going to get it's paid out as a bonus. He doesn't get that tax money. So he gets 100% tax. Yeah. He gets the $31.5 million that's paid out over 3 years as a bonus. And then when he gets called up, he's just your run-of-the-mill minor league player that gets called up. He gets his six major league seasons, and he gets his three arbitration years, and he'll be treated as, you know, as if he was drafted out of Endicott College.
It's a good investment. I mean, when you have guys that are that athletic anyways, it's like you can play them. Like, the report said that he can play like any infield position.
Yeah.
From what I
saw. Oh yeah, that's what I forgot to mention, was that when, in that conversation with Gammons, you know, I tweeted out the scouting report about, you know, how he was such a good offensive player, and he was like, yeah, I mean, the Red Sox can find a spot for him, and he mentioned, you know, corner outfield. You know, they'll find a spot. I mean, if he's that special of a talent.
Yeah, and if you're that athletic, you can find a spot on the baseball field. Right. Like, and I think it's easier to do that with a guy who can play every infield position. And then, like, if you don't have any infield positions, you can stick a guy like that in the outfield. And
right.
Because outfield is, I feel like it's a little bit easier to learn than stick a guy at shortstop.
Yep.
Who is like an outfielder.
Well,
like,
have you seen the size of this fucking guy?
He's huge, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's, and I'm going to knock on wood here, but it's taken a little while for his physical to come back. And I know that there's no testing policy over there in Cuba. I don't think that there's an issue here. I mean, this is pretty standard timetable for, you know, guys coming over like an international free agent. Today's March 4th. So I think realistically we should know on his physical by the end of this week, maybe midway through next week.
So, where do you think he ends up playing? I saw somebody, I don't know if, I think that they said maybe Sandoval plays first and he goes to third or something like that.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, but the thing that people don't understand is that that's not a decision that they have to make right now. Because
absolutely not. He's not going to
He's going to need at least a year. I'm guaranteeing the full year. And then it's possibly even a second year down there. He's 19 years old. So everyone's like, oh my God, why would they sign him? What are they going to do? And it's like, dude, things can happen in 2 years. So say it does take 2 years. David Ortiz at that point will be 41, potentially retired. I hate to say it because I don't want to live in a world where David Ortiz isn't playing for the Red Sox, smashing home runs. But that day is going to come, and it's presumably within the next 2, 3, 4 years, maybe. So say you do have Hanley Ramirez for, I think it's a 4-year deal, but he has a 5th-year option. So there's some shifting that can happen here in the post-Ortiz era. Say Ortiz retires, then I hate when people say, oh, then when Ortiz retires, we're going to put Sandoval DH. No, you're fucking not, because he's not a DH. He doesn't hit for power. He's, you know, he's a good hitter, you know.
People just think that because he's fat.
Because he's fat. That's exactly my point. People think because he's fat, he's a DH. Yeah. It doesn't work like that. Hanley Ramirez is not a left fielder. They put him out there because he's a bat. They put him out there because you can get by with a below average defensive player. Case in point, Manny Ramirez out there. So in the post-Ortiz era, you can put Hanley, not Pablo Sandoval, at DH. And then that frees up left field. You can put Moncada out there if you want to do that. Or, you know, there's so many different options that they can go with, like you said. I mean, Napoli, I'd like to say, I mean, Napoli doesn't get enough credit for how well-rounded of a player he is. He's actually a really, really, really good defensive first baseman, which is important, obviously. So, I mean, is Napoli here long-term? Is he not? But, I mean, I'd like to see Sandoval, you know, at third base for the duration of his 5-year deal. I think that he's more than capable of doing that. He's only 28. So that's another thing about Sandoval that I didn't understand was everyone saying, oh yeah, he's going to end up at first base eventually. The only way that I can see him ending up at first base is if Napoli leaves via free agency, whatever. And then they want a spot for Moncada, because the whole argument that he's too fat for third base, my dude is pretty fat, but He's got some range, and like I think I tweeted this out.
He's athletic fat. He's not fat.
Yeah, he's not fat fat. He's not David Wells fat. He's not Rod Beck fat. Rest in peace, Rod Beck.
He's like Vince Wilfork fat. Like, not that extreme, but like, did you see the video of Vince Wilfork?
Yeah.
Like on the beach in his bathing suit. Yeah. Like, the dude is huge, and he's got a massive gut, but like,
he's jacked up top.
Yeah. Like, when like I saw it, I was like, holy shit. Like. Yeah. I was expecting him just to be like fucking Jabba the Hutt, like out on the beach, and he's fucking jacked.
Yeah, he's just always, and it's always bulking season.
Yeah, pretty much.
But yeah, so I mean, they have options down the line when it comes to Moncada. He's big now, but he's only 19. He's going to be getting bigger and presumably stronger. So he's going to become, in my opinion, a corner outfielder. But for the time being, I do think that they will assign him to A-ball. I think I originally, when they assigned him, I wrote that they probably put him at AA. That may be a little premature to do that. So they could probably send him to either low A or high A to start. But that's not ruling out that he could advance pretty quickly. I mean, he could be in AA before the end of this year. I don't know. It all depends on how he does. So yeah, I think that once he gets to A-ball, you'll see him mostly in the infield. I don't think that they'll try to test him out in the outfield until, you know, that's really the direction that they're committed to him going to. Which for right now, I don't think that that's the plan. So we'll see. But yeah, I do think that, you know, when they assign him, he'll be an infielder.
What else we got?
Brings us to our next topic is the Hamels and Cliff Lee situation. So basically, the Red Sox have been linked to Cole Hamels all offseason. And this, I don't know, it's really aggravating to me because, all right, if you're the Red Sox, you know that Ruben Amaro Jr. the GM of the Phillies, is on the hot seat. He has to win this deal. And in my mind, has to win this deal means has to fleece the team that he's a trade partner with. So the Red Sox have the advantage because they know this, and the Red Sox have the advantage because they don't need Hamels. So the whole concept of, okay, we want at least one top prospect. Mainly they've been eyeballing Blake Swihart, who agreed to come on the podcast, by the way.
Hopefully he doesn't get traded then.
Hopefully he doesn't get traded, because he actually wants to be a guest on this show. That's the first time we're breaking that news. So if they want Blake Swihart or Mookie Betts, wouldn't you assume that they would eat some of the money for Hamels? Because, I mean, it's, I think it's 4 years, $90 million, and then, you know, if he gets traded, the Red Sox are on his no trade list, so he would have to waive his no trade clause to come to the Red Sox, and I'm sure that he would hold them hostage and say, pick up my option for me to do that. So that's 5 years, whatever it is, like $120-something million, which I think it's an average annual value of $22.5 million, which is pretty good for a guy that's quote-unquote an ace. I get in arguments about what an ace is all the time. There's no definition of what a fucking ace is. Like, there's no, you know, you have to do this, 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 and this. It's, there's no formula to it. It's a matter of opinion.
Just your number one pitcher.
I guess I'm okay with calling him an ace. But at the same time, I'm not, you know, Clayton Kershaw's an ace.
Yeah, there's a difference between like a number one pitcher and an elite pitcher.
Right. Yeah. Kershaw's in a league of his own. Like, yeah. That guy's a freak. There's some guys that, you know, you could put him against any lineup and he's just going to deal.
Mm-hmm.
You look at Hamels' numbers against American League lineups, and it's not a small sample size. It's somewhere in the region of 180 innings, and it's not very good. And it's spread out over a few years. I mean, we're talking several attempts at doing the whole pitching to nine guys instead of eight guys thing. And he hasn't been very successful at that. But that's why I was kind of leaning towards a guy like Cliff Lee, because the Red Sox are not going to give up Blake Swihart. They don't need to give up Blake Swihart. They're not in a panic mode right now.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I mean, like, you have a good enough staff right now where at like the very least you can tread water for the first half of the season.
Yep.
And it's not going to kill you. And then if you think that you need that number one guy, or at least another good arm, you can go out there at the trade deadline and get a guy for cheaper.
Yep. That's exactly what my stance is on this. I mean, you look at the Baltimore Orioles, who was their ace last year? Can you even name a pitcher in their rotation from last year? I mean, the casual fan cannot. So that's kind of where I stand on this, is the Red Sox have enough quality arms in this rotation. They basically have no one. I guess you could call Porcello a two, but for the most part, everyone in this rotation kind of falls into the three category, which I'm fine with, because you can win with this lineup. When you've got guys projecting the Red Sox to score 900 runs this year, which is kind of unfathomable in the post-steroid era, if people think that they're that good offensively, you can get by with a bunch of threes. They may not, you know, be pitching complete game shutouts every night, but if you can hold, you know, the opposing team to three or four runs, you're going to win more often than you lose with that lineup. So I'm totally cool with that for now. And then exploring, you know, any team.
The playoffs is where it kind of worries me, yeah, having a bunch of threes.
Yeah, but can get to the dance without an ace, but you're not winning the whole thing without an ace.
But that doesn't mean you have to address it right now.
Exactly.
And prices will come down at the trade deadline when teams are desperate.
Yeah. I mean, hopefully the Reds shit the bed and they can go out and get somebody like Johnny Cueto. You know, I don't think it'll happen, but if the Tigers have a shit year, you can maybe, you know, see what it would take to get David Price, my boy David Price.
We got to get him on the show, because it would be hilarious.
Him. I asked Price. Yeah, he didn't get back to me yet. But
maybe it's because you harassed him for like three straight years.
But he loved
it. But it turned out pretty well. Yeah. So we should get him on the show.
Yeah, I definitely think he'll do it. When the Tigers in town, I'm going to put it at an 87% chance we'll be able to get David Price on the show. But back to the whole Lee Hamels thing, I guess if you had to pick, people were saying to pick between one or the other, I would obviously pick Cliff Lee. it's a shitload of money. I mean, you're talking close to, you know, $30 million for a 36-year-old with an elbow problem who, I guess his numbers were modest against the American League East. But, I mean, you know, people want to point to that run that he had with the Rangers and the World Series and how he kind of flopped at the end. But there were a lot of innings on that arm. So I'm not going to totally say that he doesn't get it done in the playoffs, because I'm pretty sure he ate the Yankees alive that playoff run. Totally just shut them out. So yeah, I mean, if the Reds, I mean, it goes back to the old saying, it's not my fucking money. If the Red Sox want to go out and, you know, flip a guy like Shane Victorino, who there's conflicting reports, I guess, on if the Phillies would even be interested. I think Scott Lauber said no. The Boston Herald said no, that they wouldn't be. But then I think John Heyman went on 98.5 and said that I guess they might be interested or something. So, but then again, we have other chips to use to get a guy like Cliff Lee. I mean, I'm that's what the Phillies want to do. The Phillies want to get younger. They want to shed some payroll, and the Red Sox have money. And they have a need, so there might be a fit with Cliff Lee.
And the younger players.
Yeah, and they definitely have some second-tier prospects that are blocked at the major league level, like Garen Cecchini. Devin Marrero is blocked at shortstop with Bogarts. Yeah, but, I mean, they have some pretty exciting prospects that aren't even really talked about. You know, like Rafael Devers is a prospect in the Red Sox organization who... I don't know who said it, but it was someone with a very informed opinion who said he has a higher ceiling than Xander Bogaerts. So that got me pretty excited. Not that I would trade him for Cliff fucking Lee, but you know, they do have some chips to go out and get a guy like Cliff Lee and not really, you know, feel the hurt down at the minor league level. All right. Well, I guess to reiterate the Section 10 podcast, we're shooting for 2 episodes per week. 1 episode will be Pete and I just shooting the shit on all things Red Sox. I would like to set up a call system where we can take calls from people, call in through via Skype or something like that. And then the second episode of the week will, if we can book it, we have a bunch of guests lined up for the podcast, and I guess I should probably read some of these that we confirmed, because that's a pretty big deal.
We should get our shit together technically before we get guests on too, because that'll be embarrassing.
We definitely can't have Peter Gammon sitting here being like, you guys need to figure your shit out.
Yeah, Peter, you can play with my dogs until we get this figured out.
So here are the confirmed podcast guests. We don't have dates for any of these people. They basically just agreed to come on, and we have to coordinate from there. But we have Peter Gammons, Blake Swihart, Joe Kelly, Pete Abraham of the Boston Globe, Jimmy Stewart, the producer of Felger and Maz, Gary Streisky, the Red Sox sideline reporter, Don Arcillo, Keith Folk, Steve Silva of Boston.com, Rob Bradford of WEI.com, Katie Nolan of Garbage Time, got her own TV show now, going big time on us. Sam Kennedy, the COO of the Boston Red Sox, and Danny Picard of WEI.
Strongest Boston accent I've ever heard, Danny Picard.
It's phenomenal, and it's so legit. He doesn't yuck it up for the mics. Like, he definitely is that guy from Southie.
Love it.
But that's who we've got confirmed for guests. None of them have dates yet, but that's kind of where we're going with this, is we're just winging it. Just winging it here on the Section 10 podcast. But we want to thank you for listening. We want to thank Brendan Clancy, the brother of KFC, for helping us find all this shit by equipment. I mean, because without him, none of this would have been possible, because we don't know what the hell we're doing.
We still almost fucked it up, even with his suggestions.
Even with his help, we almost blew it. So thank you to him, and thank you for listening, and we will catch you next week, presumably, for the next episode, if we can figure our shit out.